9 o'clock, and that means it's time for Live from the Piano Kitchen with your resident musical genius, Mr. Jim Conley, and your co-host, Michael Katz, Michael Bernard. Tonight's special guest, music from Dan Phillips. From Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Mr. Adam Felber. Legendary folk musicians, the Meandering Troubadours. And the Piano Kitchen Radio Players, Paige Touts, Jenna Scanlon, and Brian Harwell. All right, well, thanks. We're back. It's been a long break.
Very long.
How are you? Adam, come on up. I want to introduce you to Adam Felber. This is my old writing partner from New York City. He's going to kind of co-host with us, do the open
mic.
Does that mean I'm out? Or
yeah. Oh, wow.
You're not out as much as you should just.
But he kind of even looks like
quiet
me. A little bit. I feel like you're a better version of me than I am.
Oh, I don't think that's true. Maybe much better.
I don't think it's true. but go ahead, buddy. You know, go crazy.
Wow. Yeah. All right, play the banjo.
I think I can bring everybody more joy just by not playing it.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the definition of a gentleman.
And Michael Katz, how have you been, if you don't mind?
Well, thank you for asking.
You're welcome.
I've been extremely busy and full of adventure.
Any particular adventure you want to share with us?
The first thing that came to my mind is, for about 2 years, I've been a big brother, you know, the big brother, that cool thing. Mm-hmm. And, when I left the Bay Area where I was a big brother, it was, very heartbreaking for me and the little brother. Well, the little brother and his mother came to visit me this past weekend. And it was crazy and wonderful.
How long have it been since you'd seen each other?
Maybe about 4 or 5 months.
He's still little, right?
He's still littler than me.
Good.
But which if is you little. Know me, that's,
that that's pretty tiny. Me for
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because he's already almost 8, so he'll be taller than me in about a year.
All right. Adam Felber, how are you?
I'm good. I had a great weekend. I'm a professional little brother. And what I do is I show up, I do courtesy calls on houses of big brothers who moved out of town, and I just impersonate a tiny child.
Gee, mister, that's great. Yeah, I remember all those times when I was really little then, so I can't really fill in any of the details, but yes, let's ride a bike.
That's what I do.
Wow.
Yeah.
What an incredible.
It's very fulfilling.
I wish I could be that funny, but I'm just thinking about toast, which is the
our theme
of our show today.
Yeah, tonight.
He really cares about the theme.
More than caring about the theme.
Every Piano Kitchen from now on will have a theme, and this is the moment anybody up here can say what toast means to them. Anybody want to share?
It sounds like a theme somebody came up with over breakfast this morning.
Yes, yeah, pretty much what it is.
Bacon, that's all funny because right. It's the next month.
Right. Should we launch into it?
Let's do it!
All right, well, thank you all so much for coming. And in the spirit of toast, went back to think about what the first toast I ever gave was, and I think it was at my bar mitzvah. And for those of you who aren't aware, bar mitzvah is a Jewish religious ceremony for when a boy turns 13, he becomes a man, and he has to read from the Torah. And then they have a big party, and he invites all his friends, and they read from the Torah, and then there's a party, and supposedly it's a big coming-of-age ritual. And I was not very excited about my bar mitzvah, and I gave a little speech that was mostly bull, and so I've written the speech I wish I had given. Thank you to my parents, Rabbi Eliander, members of my family, friends, and the entire congregation of Temple Sha'ar Tefillah here in Norwood, Massachusetts. I want to thank you all for attending my bar mitzvah and share with you a few thoughts I have on this great day. First off, I realize that I am now many years removed from 13, and yes, the bar mitzvah for which I am giving this speech happened almost 40 years ago, but I think now is a great time to revisit that fateful day. You see, now that most of the people who scared me into knuckling under and making the lamest possible attempt at a bar mitzvah speech are dead, I am finally strong enough to speak the words I wish I had the courage to say back then. The very idea that I somehow became a man at 13 is ridiculous, with one notable exception. My bar mitzvah was the first day I sold out and began that long history of compromise and surrender that I have come to associate with adulthood. If you translate the word bar mitzvah into English, it means, once this bullshit is done, I won't have to go to Hebrew school anymore. Now, that's not technically true. I know I'm supposed to keep going for another year until I officially graduate, but let's be honest. Once I read from this Torah, drink from this cup, get a handful of checks from my relatives, and 12 copies of the exact same book on the Marx Brothers from the other kids in my Hebrew class who have no idea what to make of me, I will never set foot in that temple classroom again. Thank you to Rabbi Eliander. Your monotonous way of speaking and lack of appropriate hygiene will stay with me for years after this night. I will long remember how you helped me learn the pronunciation of the Hebrew language. Without you, I would never have been able to master that intricate sound of a dead cow's last gasp that is so important to Torah reading. As you leaned over my shoulder and worked up a throat full of phlegm so essential to our people's language, my closeness to your skin brought an odor I imagine only comes from a deodorant created to let you carry the memory of the Dead Sea Scrolls wherever you go. Seriously, at some point you have to wash the talus. I don't think God in his infinite wisdom is going to object to a little Tide and some bounce dryer sheets on the holy cloth. The draping of the fabric over the shoulders is supposed to be a sign of respect for the Lord, not an absorbent for the reams of sweat you work up from your vigorous workout regimen of reaching into the bottom drawer of your desk for the single least tasty lemon candies known to mankind. Seriously, what is the deal with those? Do you have to put normal lemon candies through a mikveh before you can eat them? And yes, I am aware that most of the congregation here at the Piano Kitchen is not aware that a mikveh is a bath Orthodox Jewish women take in order to purify their bodies after their menstrual cycles. And that joke was really only for me, but trust me, it was totally worth it. Also, thank you. Also, Rabbi, I think it's fair to tell you now that I didn't want to have this bar mitzvah. I felt it was hypocritical. I don't believe any of this. Why should I pretend that I do? It's only after spending so much time with you in your office talking about this bar mitzvah speech that I realized one of the most important lessons you were trying to teach me. The lesson that being an adult means you have to pretend to give a shit about something that seems really stupid. To David Berkowitz, the young man who was my half-Torah tutor, I would like to say this. Fuck you. Fuck you to hell, you motherfucking asshole. Perhaps one of the reasons our rabbi has a permanent stench to him is because he stinks for picking this planet's biggest dickwad to teach me to speak and sing in what has to be the world's ugliest language. I am not kidding in any way, shape, or form when I tell you that I would be happy to take this Torah and shove it up your ass. This is not some raving from a 13-year-old boy losing it as he goes through puberty and lashes out desperately at authority on the day he supposedly becomes a man. No, this is the methodic and slow reasoning of a 50-year-old man who would gladly do this thing he has thought about for years. Let me tell you some things, David Berkowitz. One, that tragic Jufro you're sporting is not doing you any favors. Two, you don't teach anyone anything by yelling at them constantly every time they make a mistake. If you scream, ba-a-rech, 30 times in a row, in my face, without taking a breath, I'm going to keep getting it wrong just to spite you. And if you continue to yell at me as I walk down the hall after our session because I didn't say goodbye politely, or maybe I closed the door too hard for your liking, well, that is only going to ensure I practice that much less, because that stupid prayer book reminds me of your stupid face. Here's what you actually taught me, David. Anyone who actually tries to continue learning about Jewish traditions turns into a raging asshole who doesn't realize that if you are leaving the top four buttons on your shirt unbuttoned to show off your super cool chai necklace, you probably shouldn't wear a Jethro Tull t-shirt underneath it. David Berkowitz, I really hate you. And all you taught me was that I needed to get the fuck as far away from this temple as fast as I could. The fact that you have the same name as a notorious murderer is an insult to the murderer. I will give you this, David Berkowitz. Your sister was hot. Although I heard she gave Mike Berlin a hand job behind the temple at a youth group dance once. To my Hebrew school teachers, Mr. and Mrs. Daniels, here's a tip. If you encourage your students to stop asking questions, they will also stop listening. Also, Mrs. Daniels, you should know now that your singing was almost always off key. I know Mr. Daniels was always telling you that you sound great when we practice singing Sim Shalom, but he is lying to you. He's no fool. He sees what happens when you get pissed off. He's not going to say anything that in any way threatens his access to that sweet Jewish tush of yours. It's not, as you so often insist, Mrs. Daniels, that I hate being Jewish. I like being Jewish. I love old comedians, and almost all of them are Jewish. Groucho Marx was my hero at the time. That dude was Jewish. Sure, being Jewish has some downsides. This temple isn't in the town I live in because there are hardly any Jews in my town. Eventually, some Jews in my town will form a temple in an old church, and after a year, it will be burned to the ground from arson. Also, I get called Jew boy in school as I am being punched. A lot. I guess when you grow up in a hate-filled cesspool full of Boston-bred Irish Catholics, they somehow confuse the meaning of the word Jewish with the meaning of the word piñata. It's pretty easy to mistake. They both sound so foreign and strange. Honestly, my problem with the religion really all stems from learning it from you. I remember hearing you tell me the story of Adam and Eve and thinking, wait a minute. Everyone is constantly telling me that I should strive to work hard in school and learn as much as I can. And now you're telling me that the first person who ever tried to actually learn anything was bad? That makes no sense. Eve is the hero of this story. She should be celebrated. Before Eve, we were all just God's dogs. Now we are aware and thinking and responsible for ourselves. Isn't that awesome? How is it that everyone but me has this story so incredibly wrong? And how is it that asking that question could make you so incredibly angry? And then we got to the story of Abraham and God telling him to take his kid up to some mountain and kill him because he said so. Again, I couldn't quite figure this one out. I didn't see how anyone would ever follow a God who told you to kill your own kid and then say, psych, at the moment of truth. Again, I shared my thoughts with you, with the class, and again, you turned into the Incredible Hulk. It was then that I realized that this story is written so that you can control me by saying, because God wants it. I checked out on Hebrew school right after that. Even though I still had years to go before I would magically become bar mitzvah and somehow my 13-year-old late-to-develop body with a pathetic peach fuzz mustache will have become a man. You know what? Years after this barf mitzvah, I will wander into a Judaica shop and on a whim buy a few books on Jewish religion and philosophy, and here's what I will learn. This entire religion is founded on asking questions. There are questions all over the Torah. Asking questions that challenge the Torah actually made me a good student. I will want to find you and yell this to your face, but I won't be able to, so I'll settle with having a girlfriend who kind of looks like you, and after a while she will break up with me because I don't treat her well. I wasn't really aware of what I was doing till much later, and yes, I should feel bad about this. It was a terrible thing and very unfair to her. But let's be honest. You were the one who scarred me, and so you should take responsibility for what I did. I hope one day you will find Janet Mendelbaum and apologize for what you psychically made me do. To Stacy Strauss, I am sorry that I said the Temple Youth Group's production of Oklahoma sucked. It did. It totally sucked. But I shouldn't have been such an asshole about it. You guys were all trying hard and having fun, and who the hell am I to judge you for that? Your performance as Judd Fry was very Jewy. To Monica Fleischer, I'm sorry I didn't slow dance with you at Sam Alpert's bar mitzvah disco dance party. I didn't know you liked me. I will only discover this later when Stacy Strauss tells me that you are mad at me because I wouldn't slow dance with you and that you liked me. Really, even if I knew you liked me, I probably wouldn't have done it. I'm super immature. I don't know my way around girls yet. I can't deal with girls. At this point, my entire experience with women is locking myself in my bedroom and jerking off to fantasies of Cheryl Ladd somehow mistakenly walking into my room after being in a rainstorm. She thinks she's alone, and so she gets undressed and tries to dry off using my welcome back Cotter beach towel. But just before she can grab it, she sees me in the bed, and then, what's that, Cheryl Ladd? You say you don't understand why, but you've never felt this way before and want to teach me all about sex and what women really want? Why, yes, that would be fine with me. What? You think you love me? Sure, I mean, I think maybe Monica Fleischer likes me, but that's no big deal. That's pretty much it. I didn't even want to go to Sam Alpert's bar mitzvah disco dance party, but my mom made me. Once I did go, I was perfectly happy sitting there by myself and staring at the wall. But then Sam's father made me dance. And even though I don't really like dancing and I felt stupid and wanted to go home, I did it. Because if I didn't, I know Sam's dad would have stuck his stupid face in mine with that smile that says, I know what you want, even if you don't know what you want. And you know what, Sam's dad? You were right. I didn't know what I wanted. I thought I wanted to go home. But it will only be later this summer that I learn what I really want. Weed. I want weed. I want to go sit out in the parking lot and smoke weed and not be at this dance with these kids I don't really like. Yes, I am antisocial. And yes, I am an asshole. And sure, most probably I am a huge snob, but that's what I fucking want. At least until I'm old enough to get the hell out of here and move to New York City, where I can meet other assholes like me, and together we can feel superior to everyone. To Sam, although your bar mitzvah disco dance party was lame, I have to tip my hat to you and the nonstop run of fart jokes you told all through Hebrew school. They weren't always funny, but you knew your lane and you ran it like a pro. Plus, your endless obsession with Mrs. Daniels' butt kind of opened my eyes to the fact that middle-aged Jewish women in pantsuits are hot. You were way ahead of me on that front. To my parents, what the fuck? Seriously, if you were serious about me learning and following the Jewish religion, why not move to a neighborhood where there were some actual Jewish people? I'm the freak show where we live now. Also, to my dad, thanks for setting the example by only going to temple if it means you have to miss work. Wait a minute. To my mom, I am sorry if this speech hurts your feelings. I know how important the Jewish religion is to you and how you love going to temple and have fond memories of growing up studying Judaism with all your friends who lived in the same neighborhood as you. I will give you credit for the way you always shouted, Tekiah, every time my dad blew his nose really loudly. And yes, this is another joke that is only going to appeal to a very specific group of people, and most probably only me here tonight, but once again, yes, totally worth it. To the four friends I have who aren't Jewish and had to get dressed up and come to this freak show, I am sorry. I didn't really want to invite you, but my parents made me. I knew it would suck. I am sorry you had to shove your bodies into ill-fitting fancy clothes with incredibly wide lapels and drive to Norwood. I'm sorry you had to sit on those uncomfortable folding chairs that do have the one benefit of sounding like a fart when you sit down. Tip of the cap to Sam Alpert for pointing out this gem to me. Now, why, you may ask, would this man, who is almost ready to stand up in front of the congregation and declare, "Today I am a senior citizen," want to revisit his bar mitzvah speech? How is it possible he has held so tightly onto these petty grievances and resentment for so many years? Didn't he at some point get a life? Why hasn't he gotten the fuck over himself? Why is he capitalizing on his childhood sufferings in exchange for a few cheap laughs? Isn't that kind of pathetic? And yes, it is pathetic. But I have to admit that I recently went to the bat mitzvah of a friend's daughter. I dreaded even going into the temple, but I did. And it was kind of great, kind of beautiful. And when that young woman got up to share her thoughts and thanks with the congregation, it was very honest and heartfelt, and not the 5 pounds of shit I shoveled those many years ago. And at first it made me wish I had the courage to actually say what I really wanted to so long ago. And then it made me wish my bar mitzvah had actually meant something to me. It almost made me wish I sent my sons to temple and they could have bar mitzvahs. That maybe all the petty resentments I held over the years had really nothing to do with the other people and everything to do with me. Maybe the point of this whole day I become a man crap is that I have to look inside and take responsibility for myself and my actions. It wasn't all those other people who drove me out of the religion. It was my own inability to look past petty problems and accept the greater truth of what Judaism has to offer. Now maybe that's what they mean when they say, you become a man. And then I think, fuck that. And I get ready to hightail it out of this temple as fast as I can, just as soon as I can finish the free meal. Thank you.
Hey, our first musical guest tonight is a good friend of mine who's about to be a daddy. And Dan Phillips is a soon-to-be father, a great cook, right? Probably a good husband. Gene, am I right? A fair husband, right? And one hell of a clarinet player. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Phillips.
That last came from a lovely encounter that Jim and I had with a homeless guy. Very nice.
He didn't. He was not homeless. He lived.
He had a home, and it was his wheelchair. Yeah. And we were out, and I was dressed in shirt, probably something like this.
Exactly like that.
Jim was dressed in a leather jacket. He talks with us for a little while. He says, "You guys are musicians, aren't you?" We looked at each other and we're like, "Yeah, this guy is real."
I'm the guitar player, electric guitar player.
Yeah, guitar player. Yeah, Jim and Jim, relatively close. Yeah, melodica and banjo, bass. And then he looks at me and he says, "You play clarinet."
Is that cruel?
All right, so the theme was toast, and Jim was very kind. He said that I didn't need to actually really worry about doing that, but I started thinking about it, and I started thinking about what I would do with toast, and I started with something that was funny, but then I was kind of thinking of toast from a first-person perspective of like the slice of bread still in the loaf and then coming out, and then I started realizing that this was an allegory for our daughter who's due in a couple weeks, and so this is about toast and about birth, I guess. I finished writing it about half an hour before we came here, so
what's it called?
The Lost and the Found.
Confession, gravity on my feet. breath ago.
In California that still actually needs rain in our reservoirs. So our front yards are very wet, but the reservoir is still kind of empty. So this is about that.
Okay, Jenna and Adam. So Adam Felber and I used to write sketch comedy many years ago in New York City. And we're going to do an old sketch of ours that somehow seems timely in a weird way.
Yeah, it's timely again. I think more so than when we wrote it.
So just imagine that I and Jenna are in sort of traditional caveman outfits, which we actually had when we did it.
We did.
And Adam is in a three-piece suit.
Well, it's a caveman outfit, furs. But has a leopard skin tie and that kind of thing. I think I had a collar made of leopard skin as well.
And so, in for this sketch, we take you back to caveman days.
Good evening, Woolly Mammoth Clan. Tomorrow, big day. We choose new cave leader. Tonight we have debate. First, me like to thank League of Primate Voters for making night possible. Our candidates tell us what they do if they cave leader. Or maybe they not know. That joke! Now we meet candidates. From Neanderthal Party, Og.
Son of Og. Og, 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 Og!
And from Cro-Magnon Party, Samuel Worthington, the third.
Thank you.
Now, each candidate gives opening statement, then questions.
Me, Og, me son of Fog. Fog was good cave leader. Og be good cave leader. Fog big and strong. Og big and strong. Thank you.
My friends, for too long, our clan has been mired in traditions and customs of the past that have been holding us back. If I have the privilege of serving you as clan leader, I promise to bring some of the new ideas and new procedures that will help take us into the Bronze Age. Thank you very much.
Now, questions. First question. What you do about winter?
Og say, winter gone. Now is warm. No need worry about winter. Thank you.
Okay, now, friends, if you cast your mind back to last summer, you might remember we were saying the exact same thing. Winter's gone. It's never coming back, but it did. Just as it always does. No. What I propose we do this summer is we save some of the meat from our kills, dry it, keep it at the back of the cave so that when winter comes back, and it will, we will have plenty of food for the coming season. Thank you very much.
Thank you. A good idea.
Thank you.
More and more children get killed by saber-tooth tiger. What you do about this?
I'll say, give children pointy stick. Put a stick kill, then no worry about saber-tooth. Thank you.
It's an idea, but I think many of us know the tragedies that occur when we give our little children pointy sticks. Now, instead, what I suggest is that we send some of the older people, to go out and watch the children play, and then if they see something occur, they come get us, and we take care of it. Thank you.
A good
idea. Thanks. Clan of Buffalo take our apples and our women. How you stop them?
Og say, smash Clan of Buffalo! Thank you.
I'm actually with Og on this one.
Og!
What your opinion on these new tools we hear so much about.
Og say, no need for tools. Pointy stick kill. Big rock smash. Tools frighten and confuse Og. No need for tools. Thank you.
See now, friends, if you were to think about it and think about tools, you will realize we're already using them. For what is a big heavy rock if not a tool to smash? What is a pointy stick, if not a tool, to stab? No, people. As evolution occurs and goes forward, and the mammoths get bigger, and the saber-tooths get more ferocious, we're going to need bigger, more ferocious tools just to keep up, and I say we ought to use them.
Why you talk like you smarter than Og? You talk like you better and no more.
Well, I do. I have a higher forehead and more cranial capacity, so I'm more able to reason than you are. Look, I think we all say which way this is going, and I want to thank everybody, including the League of Primate Voters.
Wait! Ogno! Something about Samuel
Worthington. What could you possibly know about
me? Ogtree Samuel... Fuck Woolly Mammoth!
What?
Yeah, I'll have proof!
You can't possibly have proof. There is no... What? That's a crude stone tablet. That doesn't even look like me.
I'm shocked and saddened by such moral depravity on part of candidate.
What? That's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. As I said, it doesn't look like me. What are you doing with that thing? What are you... No! Ow! Ah, Jesus!
Og winner!
Yeah! Og, like to thank worthy opponent. Og regret negative tone of campaign. Og say, now is time for healing.
Yes, we could use a little...
Healing!
Then the lights are gone.
Our next guest wants you all to know that he cares more about the theme than anyone else. Toast, you've been thinking about it. I feel it. Jim Connolly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's kind of a stupid theme, isn't it? Nonetheless, I fixated on it for a while. That will never stop me. So I repurposed some actually good music to make Michael and Michael happy and impressed. Country music, I am good at football. I can sing real high. I would rather not play chess. Sign me up for checkers. I'm not good with horses, barbecues, or what lurks in between there? Is it back or right? Can I change my mind now? How can I be right? I find comfort trusting in questions more than answers. Wait, I'm not so certain. I'm not sure that's true. Do you like the feeling when you do things you're not good at? Trying makes you glorious. I will feed you toast. I vote for adventure. Failure by design. I just want to win by changing my own mind. Can I change my mind now? Thank you. Flying time. Let's Let's wake up the children. If flying is not just for dreams, I love this time we live in. They told us you might last a month. I hope you have a secret. Someone called it lilac time. Someone should be hunting. I can fly. I can fly. Time is warm and slow. Speed is what we're given. Not about your flying dream. Let's wake up the children. It's been 9 years since you have flown. Let's find out what you've hidden. I can fly. I can fly. Just for dreams, I love this time we live in. They told us you might last a month. I hope you have a secret. Someone called it lilac time. Someone should be flying. I can fly. I can fly.
Everyone stand up. If you can, please stand up. Put your hands together like this. Make your jaw loose. Go like this. One shoulder is backwards. Forward. One shoulder forward. The other one backward at the same time. That's messed up. Switch it up. Switch it up. Switch it up. Move fingers on one hand, then hand on the wrist and the arm up high, down low. Fingers on the wrist, arm up high, down low. You're sitting on a shaking booty. Foot ankle leg, foot ankle leg. So, can I switch? Can I use the stool? Yeah. So, I've been a storyteller for 25 years now. That's a gig. And for kids. And I love the Piano Kitchen because it gives me a chance to...
Swear.
Listen to people swear. And tell stories that I'm forbidden to tell in the schools. And I learned a lot of things the hard way. And, I had to learn a lot of stories real fast in the early days. And so, you know, I'd grab Grimm's Fairy Tales and grab this. And I came across a story called The Juniper Tree. And I said, oh, this will be great for older kids in an elementary school, you know. And then I got this gig at the school, and they said, we're going to have kindergarten, first grade, and second grade at the assembly. I said, oh, I thought it was going to be the upper grades. The story I have may not be appropriate for them. What kind of story is it? Oh, it's a Grimm's fairy tale. Oh, we do Grimm's all the time here. They'll love it. So we got 4 calls from parents that night about the storyteller who was telling the story about cannibalism. And here's the story for you now. And maybe you can explain to me why I got into trouble for this. Okay, here goes. Once, there was a couple, and they lived out in the woods. They were happy, except for one thing. The wife was unable to have children. And this troubled her and brought her sadness from time to time. When the wife was sad, she would go out into the woods and she would sit underneath this juniper tree, which would give her comfort. And when she felt better, she would return home. Well, one day during the winter, when there was snow on the ground, she was overcome with this sadness about not being able to have a child, and she went out to the juniper tree, and she brought with her this red apple, and she laid down a cloak, and she sat down on the snow, and she started to carve the apple, and as she was carving it, she cut her thumb, and it started to bleed on the snow. And she looked at the blood on the snow, and this feeling came over her of peace. She returned home, and she was no longer troubled about not being able to have a child. And the months passed. The snow melted, the trees grew green, fruit on the trees. And after 9 months passed, much to her surprise, she had a baby. And she was so surprised, she died on the spot. Yeah, I know. People usually do laugh. Yeah. Well, he was overcome with sadness, but he decided to bury her underneath the juniper tree, her favorite spot. Well, the child was this beautiful boy. And, he needed a mother, and the father married again. And with the new mother, he had a daughter. Now, this woman was kind to the daughter, but for some reason, every time she'd see her stepson, the devil would come inside of her, and she'd be mean and unkind to him. One day, the daughter came back from school, and when she came back from school, the mother said, "Hello there, daughter, would you like an apple?" And she opened up this wood chest with a sharp silver lock on it, and there were these beautiful apples in there. And the daughter, she grabbed one of the apples, and she took a bite out of it. "Oh, this is delicious, mother. I can't wait to share one with my brother." And as soon as she mentioned the brother's name, the devil got inside the mother, and she was mean and unkind to her. And she said, "You can't have one." And she grabbed the apple from her, "and neither can your brother." And the daughter walked away and said, "Whatever." And she went outside. Well, shortly thereafter, her brother came in, and the stepmother, she opened up that wood chest with the sharp silver lock, and she said, "Hello there, stepson. Would you like an apple?" Well, he looked at those apples, and they looked delicious, and he started to reach for one. She said, "No, no, no, the ones in the back, they're the best." And the boy stuck his head all the way into that wooden chest, and she slammed the lid shut, and the boy's head popped off. She opened up the wood chest. She looked at what she had done. She took the boy's head, put it back onto his neck, wrapped a red scarf around his neck, dragged him outside, and leaned him up against the juniper tree. Why did I get into trouble? Well, his sister walked up and said, she saw her brother leaning against a tree. She said, "Brother, would you like to play?" But he didn't say anything. "Brother, would you like to play?" But he didn't say anything. And she went into the house and she said, "Mother, I keep asking my brother to play and he doesn't say anything to me and it's making my flesh creep." And the mother said, "You know what I would do? If he doesn't talk to you, I'd box his ears." "Box his ears?" "Yes, I'd box his ears." So the sister went out and she said, "Brother, do you want to play?" And he didn't say anything. And she boxed his ears and his head fell right off. She ran in and she said, "I boxed his ears and his head fell off." And her mother said, look what you've done. Years of therapy. Look what you've done. Bring him inside, I'll take care of it. So she brought in her brother. And the mother chopped him up into little pieces. Why did I get into trouble? Just gets better. Put him into a sour broth and stirred it up. Well, the boy's father came home and he said, where's my son? And his wife said, he's gone away to visit your uncles. Oh, I'm so angry. He left and he didn't even say goodbye to me. She said, come, come, sit down, have some soup. With toast.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry.
I should, yeah.
Is that the end?
So he sat down. So he sat down and he tasted the soup. And as he tasted the soup, a feeling got inside of him that he and only he should eat this soup and no one else. So he ate and he ate and he ate and he stacked up the bones on a silver plate. Well, when he fell asleep, the daughter, Anne Marie, gathered up the bones in a white silk cloth and tied them up and buried them underneath the juniper tree. And when she covered them, the tree started to move. The limbs moved in and out, the branches rustled, the leaves shook. Smoke came up from the ground, and when the smoke cleared, the tree stopped moving. And there, perched on the branch, was a little bird. And it flew away. And it flew until it came to a shoemaker's house and perched itself in the tree and began to sing a song, and it went like this. My mother, she butchered me. My father, he ate me. My sweet little sister, Anne Marie, she gathered up the bones of me and put them in a white silk cloth and buried them under the juniper tree. Twee, twee, what a pretty bird am I. The shoemaker said, what a wonderful song, please sing it again. The bird said, not unless you pay me. Well, I'm working on these shoes. And he tied the shoelaces together and he threw it up to the bird, and the bird caught the shoes tied together by the shoelaces, sang the song again, and flew away, and flew and flew and flew until it perched itself in a tree by a goldsmith's, and it began to sing its song. And please join if you like, it's a beautiful song. My mother, she butchered me. My father, he
ate me. Yes.
My sweet little sister, Anne Marie, she gathered up the bones of me and put them in a white silk cloth and buried them under the
juniper tree.
Everyone, tweet, tweet. What a pretty bird am I. Wonderful song, said the goldsmith. Please sing it again. Not unless you pay me. Well, you can have this necklace. And he threw the necklace up to the bird. The bird caught the necklace, sang the song again, and flew off. And flew and flew and flew until it perched itself in a tree by a miller's. And it began to sing its song. Everyone, my mother, she butchered me. My father, he ate me. Some of the millers started coming out. My sweet little sister, Anne Marie, she gathered up the bones of me. All the millers came out and put them in a white silk cloth and buried them under the juniper tree. Tweet, tweet, what a pretty bird. Wonderful song, please sing it again, said the millers. And the bird said, not unless you pay me, and you must pay me with the millstone. Well, the millstone was enormous, but somehow the millers picked it up, put it around the bird's neck. It sang the song again, and it flew off. And it flew until it perched itself back in the juniper tree. And as it did that, inside the house, Anne Marie and the father felt wonderful, but the stepmother felt like death was running through her veins. The bird began to sing its song. My mother, she butchered me. Anne Marie said, I'm going to go take a walk. My father, he ate me. My sweet little sister, Anne Marie. And Anne Marie saw the bird, and the bird dropped the necklace around her. Oh, why, thank you, bird. And she ran into the house. Look what this bird gave me, the father said, let me see. And put them in a white silk cloth and buried them under the juniper tree and dropped the shoes to the father. Oh, thank you, bird. He walked into the house and the stepmother said, maybe the bird has something for me. Everyone, tweet, tweet. What a pretty bird am I. And dropped the millstone onto the stepmother. And when the smoke cleared, there standing on top of the stone was the little boy. We are very excited to now have with us, fresh from their tour of
Latvia
and places beyond, the Meandering Troubadours, everyone!
Thank you. Very nice of you.
Thank you. Hi. Thank you so much. Hi.
Hi, everybody. Hi.
This is Kyle.
And this is Donnie.
And we are
the Meandering Troubadours.
And what we do is
we sing
folk songs,
which are the songs
of the folk
who sing them
from
all over the whole
place.
And we know just about
every folk song
you could possibly
imagine.
There's so many. It's such a.
It's a plethora.
It's
of what it is.
A glorious tapestry of folk music sung by
people
who are folk.
So, what we were thinking is because we don't have time to do our usual 6-hour show.
Right. We will be doing that show on Monday night.
Yeah. At the public library.
Behind the public
parking lot. Where they can't see us.
Until the library opens at 9 a.m.
If you could suggest some event.
Event, any event in someone's life.
Big or
small, even.
Or big or small. That could happen, and we'll go back into the
swirling
encyclopedia
hard disk
in our brains and come up with a great
folk song
about that event.
About that life event.
So if you could just shout out
any event that might happen to somebody.
With shouting.
And out of peanut butter.
Out of peanut butter.
Oh my God, out of peanut butter. Wow. There are so many
folk songs.
Folk songs.
About
running out of peanut butter. It's like too hard to choose.
But there's so many.
There's
I'm Out of Peanut Butter.
Yeah, no, that was by Three-Toed McGinty.
Yeah.
And you know, the funny thing about Three-Toed McGinty is
he had a full complement of toes.
Yeah, they did. That's not. They didn't call him that because he only had three toes. They called him Three-Toed McGinty because.
Because he had a pet sloth. That perched on his shoulder
all the time.
Well, he sang, and he sang, "I'm out of peanut butter."
I'm out of peanut butter, and then there's
"I'm like, out of peanut butter." Where's that peanut butter? I don't think I lost it.
I know I left it in the shelf.
So where
is the peanut butter? Yeah, that's a good
that's
one.
A great classic.
You know,
there's another one.
Like, where's the goddamn peanut butter?
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was by
Cedric No Nose Henderson.
You know, it's a funny story
about No Nose.
They called him No Nose, but not because he didn't have a nose.
No, it's because he didn't know anything.
Yeah, he was the stupidest man. He knew nothing.
Right.
And
in fact, the follow-up song to "Where the Hell's My Peanut Butter" is "Oh, It Was Here All Along."
Yeah. And he went on to have many great "Where Are My Pants?"
Yes.
"What did I do with that pen?"
"Who are you people?"
Yeah. That was a great one.
No, Henderson,
That guy knew nothing.
He really didn't know anything.
But you know, he's a sweet man.
He really was. He was.
And then, what's another great?
Another great being out of peanut butter song would be the
There's
the year
only
of the peanut
here.
Butter famine.
Oh, year of the peanut butter famine. That's an
old Irish folk song.
Right?
The year of the peanut butter famine. And
that was by
Mabel
Five-Eyed
Wombat.
Mabel Five-Eyed Wombat.
Yes.
And it's a funny story.
She wasn't.
They didn't call her Five-Eyed Wombat because she was a Five-Eyed Wombat.
Though she was.
Yeah. No,
they called
her Five-Eyed five-eyed wombat. No one knew.
No one knew.
It's a terrible nickname, really.
No, I don't know who came up
with
that.
That's a terrific
song.
Yet a
coincidence.
If we were to sing that song during our six-hour set tomorrow night, we would get halfway through it.
Yeah. And then there's only jelly here.
There's only jelly here.
Yeah, now that one.
That one was by Lucius.
Three Legs.
Lucius Three Legs. Yeah.
Lucius Three Legs. Three Legs. Great.
Yeah, now, this is interesting, too.
Funny story.
The man had two legs on his body.
Yes, but he also had a third leg he kept in a case that he traveled with, and that's why they called him Three Legs.
Three Legs, yes, because total.
He was afraid that he would lose a leg.
And thus have a spare on him at all times. This prevented him from carrying a guitar, though, which hurt his musical career in a big way.
A lot. But he did lose a leg at one point.
He did.
And then he had the spare, and then he...
So, he had the last laugh.
Okay.
All right.
But I know what you want to
do. I know which one you want to do.
You want to sing
the saga.
The best
ever
song about losing
being out of
peanut butter.
Yeah.
Is the saga of
Derek being out of peanut butter.
The saga of Derek being out of peanut butter.
Yes.
Now, it's funny. This song was written by
Badass McGee.
Badass McGee. That's a funny story about Badass McGee.
Yeah.
Is they didn't call him Badass McGee as an indictment of his posterior.
No. He had a lovely pear-shaped butt.
Really, I still actually...
His fifth album features nothing but that on the cover.
Yeah,
because he
was
starting to...
I did those sketches.
You did?
Yeah, I drew
from life.
Yeah.
He was a great friend of both of us.
No, they call him Badass...
McGee.
McGee.
Because he had a terrible donkey.
That donkey was so mean.
A douchebag.
What an awful donkey.
Douchebag donkey. Yeah.
I've already forgotten the name of the song we were going to sing.
It was the saga of Derek running out of peanut butter.
Okay, here we go. Gather round, children, and listen to my tale. But a boy named Derek, he was quite pale, but he loved a good sandwich. He liked to put on it PB&J. That's all he would eat every single day. He was poor, not rich. One day he went and reached onto the shelf. This is what he said to himself.
The saga of Derek running out of peanut butter. The saga.
Saga of Derek running out of peanut butter.
Derek's cupboard was old and was smelly. In just a wink, he discovered the jelly. And it reached for the substance that Derek, he liked the most. He loved that stuff. It was cool and it was dreamy. He liked the bumpy stuff and also the creamy. He tried to take it down and spread it on toast. Then the universe came crashing down. It wasn't fair. Derek's beloved peanut butter, it wasn't there. The saga of Derek running out of peanut butter.
That's right. Todd changed it.
Saga!
Saga of Derek running out of peanut butter. Said, woe is me.
And he grabbed a bag of kimchi.
He spread it on the bread.
It was Korean, to which he was allergic.
And then he felt like such a huge jerk.
And soon
Derek dropped dead.
And with his final breath, Derek said, oh, why?
I should have just had some toast from a loaf of fry. The saga of Derek running out of peanut butter. The saga of Derek running out of peanut butter. The saga of Derek running out
of peanut
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Piano Kitchen Radio Theater, the only radio drama not actually played on the radio. Tonight, we bring you part one of our ongoing story, A Happy Family, a never-ending look at a typical American home. Let's peek in on parents Robert and Sally and their two teenage children, Heather and Frank.
Bye, Mom. Bye, Dad.
Heather? Wait a minute.
Dad, I have to go. I'm gonna miss the party.
Don't you have to get dressed first?
I am dressed.
Heather, if you want to go to the party, you're going to have to put something over that bra.
But all the girls are wearing only bras now. It's the thing.
No.
Dad!
No. Put on a shirt or you don't go out.
You let Frank do it. He gets away with everything.
Yeah, I don't know that I would let your brother wear a bra to a party either. Well, I guess it depends on the party.
Oh my God, I hate you!
Can you hate me wearing an actual shirt?
Honey, would you really let Frank go to a party dressed like that?
I don't know. Hey, thanks for the help with Heather.
You were doing such a masterful job destroying your relationship with her that I didn't want to get in the way. Plus, I think it helps if our daughter likes one of us.
Hey, Dad.
Oh, good. Round two.
What is it, Frank?
Hey, you guys are cool with me going to that 12-hour science fiction film festival downtown, right?
12 hours?
Yeah.
Of science fiction?
Yeah. It's really cool. They show classic and sometimes forgotten sci-fi films, and it doesn't even matter if they're any good.
Couldn't you just rent these movies and watch them at home?
I guess.
Well, then why go see them in the theater?
Because I'm going with Teddy and Evan.
Couldn't they just come here and watch?
I guess.
Then why go sit in some dark, scuzzy movie theater for 12 hours?
Because it's 12 hours, I don't have to be at home.
Good answer. Have fun.
Thanks, Dad.
Robert.
What? He wasn't wearing the bra outfit.
Get ready. Heather's coming back.
Well, I changed. Is this outfit okay?
It's not the nun's habit I was hoping for, but it will have to do.
I hate you!
Well, that's a great way to kick off a Friday.
You know what? It is great. We got two kids who are old enough to be out on their own. We don't have to worry about driving them anywhere or picking them up. We're independent. This is great.
I didn't think of that. What should we do?
I don't know. We could go bowling.
We do that with the kids.
We could go to J.T. McStuffin Time's Good Time Eatery in Beerpalooza.
No, that's the same thing we do with the kids. Yeah. We are going someplace new and different. We are going to that new macrobiotic vegan whole plant raw animal rights restaurant.
Yeah, that's great. I was just thinking I haven't eaten a good plate of dirt for a while.
Come on, you just... said we were independent. You just said we could do new and different things. This would be new and different.
I don't know.
I mean, look at our lives. Our teenage daughter wants to go to a party and we tell her to cover up. Our dorky son wants to hide his pimply face in a movie theater so he can watch cheesy science fiction movies for half a day. It's like some hack wannabe sitcom writer with no imagination is creating our lives. Yeah. I want to do something different. And I want to go to that slow food humanitarian farm-to-table vegan place.
Why does it need to be humanitarian if it's vegan? Are the plants being mistreated?
Let's go there and find out.
Ah, you're right. Let's go.
Oh, welcome to Psychedelicatessen. How are you?
Hi. Table for two, please.
Wow.
What?
How are you? It's not just a line. I really want to know how you are.
I'm good. Table for two, please.
Okay, sure, but maybe you could tone down the hostility a little.
What?
This isn't really an aggressive establishment.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to communicate to you my need for a table.
Does any of us really need anything?
What?
What do we really need, man?
Food.
Clothing.
Hydration.
Medicine.
iPhones.
I didn't think of any of those things.
So, can we get a table?
Let me see. I have a reservation list here somewhere.
Maybe you left it in your giant beard.
Huh. Oh, wow, you're right. Thanks. I never would have thought to look in my beard. Yeah, I can fit you in. There's a spot at our communal table.
We were actually hoping for something kind of private and romantic-y.
Ah, that's cool. No one ever comes here.
Well, how do you stay in business?
We have a lucrative artisanal mayonnaise wagon.
Of course you do.
Right. Right this way. So, everything in the restaurant has been repurposed. We don't believe in waste, so you guys can sit here at the sawed-off stump and the broken beach chair.
It's so dark in here.
Well, we don't believe in using fossil fuels or any kind of energy that hurts the environment.
What about solar?
Haven't enough people already stolen from the sun?
How do you cook your food?
Candles and hope. Enjoy.
Can we get some menus?
Oh no, we don't print the menu because that would mean we were murdering the
trees.
Ink plants.
Of course.
How will we know what to order?
I will bring the food that is ready to give itself to you.
Great.
In the meantime, please enjoy this respite, our acorn toast points with our home-distilled grass wine.
Acorn toast points?
I know, right?
How do you make toast points from acorns?
Well, we turn the acorns into raw toast.
Isn't that just bread?
I mean, if you need to put a label on it, okay. But then we take the raw toast and make it toast, but we keep everything raw.
That makes no sense.
It does if you think about it.
This is very, crunchy.
I think mine has dirt in it.
Well, this certainly is different.
It's stupid.
No. Well, yes, it's a little stupid, but we're trying something new, and that's what's important. Hey, somebody has a birthday coming up. What do you want? Something new? Something different?
I have everything I want.
Oh, come on, there must be something. It's the new us, the independent us. The us that takes risks. Don't bail on me now.
Nope.
Yes, that was a yes. There was a yes masquerading as a no.
All right, fine. You remember Trish in marketing?
Oh, I do remember Trish.
What does that mean?
That I remember her.
Well, I was talking to Trish in marketing, and, well, we were talking about being young, and she had all these wild experiences at Wellesley College and when she lived in New York before she settled down.
You want to move to New York?
Forget it.
No, I'm sorry. Tell me.
Okay, well, I was just so jealous. I wanted to have a wild youth. I never got to do those things. I never went to college.
You can go now. We can make it work.
I never did drugs.
Well, there was that time we took mushrooms when we camped out at Lilith Fair.
You mean when we were stuck inside the tent all day because I couldn't figure out how to unzip it and you spent 4 straight hours masturbating?
I was really sore the next day.
I didn't even get to see Natalie Merchant.
Well, there was that time we took Percodin when we went to the Palm Springs.
Yes, that was the best 3-day nap I ever had. I've never even made it out to the pool.
Well, do you want to try something else? My friend Lester's cousin, you know, the one who lives in the trailer behind the train station? I think he cooks meth.
No!
So what?
It's stupid. I never had a wild experimental fling.
Well, what about that time that you dyed your hair red?
You don't. It's not. I'm not talking about...
Are you saying that you want to have an affair?
Sort of?
How do you sort of have an affair? What the hell is a sort of affair? Nothing under the shirt? Also, aren't you supposed to keep an affair secret? Maybe not tell your husband that for your birthday you want to have sex with another man?
But I don't.
What?
I don't want to have sex with another man.
Well, what?
All my female friends at work, they all had this thing in college where they dated women.
Ah.
I never had that.
So now you want to be a lesbian? Is that why you bought those Birkenstocks?
No. Maybe. I don't know. I guess I just wish I had done something wild like that when I was younger. And you asked me what I wanted. Now that the kids are more independent, this is what I thought of.
So you want to have sex with a woman?
Just to see.
But are you talking about the Kate McKinnon kind of lesbian or the Velma from Scooby-Doo kind of lesbian?
You don't know that Velma was a lesbian.
Her choices were Fred, Shaggy, or Daphne.
Okay, point taken. Mm-hmm. But still, it's not what she looks like as much as just trying it.
Are you talking like a three-way? Because I don't know that I have the stamina for that.
No, why do you have to make everything gross?
Well, that's what I'm good at. So, do you have something in mind? Someone in mind?
I told you. Trish in marketing.
Oh, that's why you asked about Trish. Oh, yeah.
What does that mean?
Trish is hot. I can see why you'd want to go there. Are you sure that she's a...
I think so. She keeps flirting with me, and she's always asking me if I want to have drinks after work, and I don't know, how would you feel if...
How would I feel if you had drinks with Trish, or how would I feel if you had sex with Trish?
Either. Maybe both?
I don't know what to say, except, I mean, if that's what you really want, okay.
Really?
I guess. I mean, as long as you don't leave me for Trish or anything.
Honey, I'd never leave you for Trish. You make way more money than she does.
Thank you. So, if you get to try something like that...
What?
Well, it's only fair...
What's only fair?
You know that...
What?
I do what you're doing. I mean, not exactly. I'm not asking you if I can ask Trish out, too.
Because Trish would never date you.
How do you know?
You don't have breasts.
Please, we both know that's not entirely true. I do need to go on a diet. These acorns are helping me eat less.
You're right. If we're going to be fair about this, you can absolutely have a one-nighter. In fact, I think you should.
Okay.
But with a man.
Really? I gotta think about that. I don't know that I want someone waving one of those things in my face.
Well, how do you think I feel?
I never thought about that.
Oh, I know. You're always sticking that thing in my face with no thought to how I feel.
I guess I thought you liked it.
Oh, sure. I love having a cucumber whacked around my face. That's the best.
Now, when you say cucumber, you mean like a big cucumber, right? Not one of those little Parisian ones?
A perfectly appropriate-sized cucumber. Christ, are we really talking about this again?
See, that's my problem. What if I meet some guy and we go home and he has a way bigger penis than I do?
I never thought about that. Do you think size can be an issue for gay male couples?
How could it not be? We've been together for 20 years and I still think you're humoring me when you tell me you don't think my penis is small.
Honestly, sometimes when I have that thing in my mouth, I wish it was a little smaller.
Really?
It's like you're drilling for oil or something.
I think I'll take that as a compliment. Still, I mean, what if...
It's not like you're going to be jousting with the guy.
Well, how do you know? Have you ever had gay man sex?
Well, no. I just don't think running at each other with your spears out is part of it.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. You know what? I'm in. You can have a night with Trish, and I'll have a night with some strange man.
He doesn't have to be strange. It could be someone you know.
I don't want to go to bed with any of the gay guys I know.
What about Steven?
Have you been in that guy's bedroom? I'd constantly be afraid I was going to knock over something. Those sheets must have a million thread count and be incredibly expensive. I'd be terrified I'd stain them.
Why don't you care about our sheets like that?
Because our sheets have a 3-thread count and are from Costco.
Okay, well, you're going to have to find some guy. Maybe a bar or the internet. What about Grindr?
Isn't that just for gay sex?
Aren't we just talking about gay sex?
I guess.
What, you want to be wined and dined, play hard to get? This is a one-time thing, not a months-long seduction.
Fine, fine. I'll find a gay bar, I'll pick up some strange man and have sex with him. Happy?
I think I am.
Hey, here's your chopped spirulina and wheatgrass with camel hair pasta. It's made from actual camel hair.
We'll take the check, please.
If you want to hear what happens next in the lives of Sally, Robert, Heather, Frank, and their pet dog, Waldo, come back to next month's show. That's our show. Thank you very much. Thank you to all our guests. Thank you, Paige, Brian, Jenna for the radio play. Thanks to Dan Phillips, Adam Felber, Michael Katz, and Tommy, Michael Bernard. Thank you so much. Good night.